And it's time for Alan Adams.
In what a time world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to
time
the
to talk
lobby.
Movies with Alan Adams of The Main Edge. Brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, 557 Stillwater Avenue, Bangor, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Hello, Al.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well. How was your weekend?
It was good. It was good. Yeah, I had a good one.
I see you were knee-deep in rehearsals. You had your first run-through, is that right?
Oh, yeah. No, well, we ran the act one. We ran the top of act, first half of the show.
Did you have a cafeteria tray? Is that what that was in that picture? I couldn't tell.
Yes. My role, I am a resident aide at an assisted living community, and so I deliver food and drugs.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so it's very similar to my life outside of the theater.
Without the tray.
Well, sure.
Well, let's talk about, we're going to talk about some specific movies you saw, but first let's get your thoughts on the Oscars. And well, who won? Who won the belt?
You know, it was not me.
Oh.
No, it was our friend Danielle Pelletier.
Really?
Was the champ this year. It was not a great showing by anybody. Which anyone who watched the show and saw the results obviously understands that predicting those results was tricky business. Mm. I wound up I believe my final number was 14 out of 24, which is I'm pretty sure the worst number I've put up ever since I became a professional movie knower. by a pretty good margin. Like last year, I was like 21 for 24. Like and I'm usually, you know, high teens, at the very least, but yeah, just there were a lot of real shockers.
Yeah. And it was going along relatively predictable there for a while, but, well, I guess it started with Olivia Colman. That was the one that shocked a lot of people. Although for me, that was the best part of the whole broadcast.
Oh, she was fantastic. And she was as shocked as anyone else that she won.
Yes.
Like, because we had all sort of come to the, you know, we just assumed that Glenn Close's win was a foregone conclusion. Every pre-Oscars indicator led us to believe that. And then just out of the blue, here we go, Olivia Colman, best actress. Her speech was phenomenal. Her performance was phenomenal. Like she's great in The Favorite, and so it's certainly an Oscar-worthy performance. But I think we all just kind of, we all just assumed that it was Glenn Close's time. Yeah. But that puts Ms. Close at 0-7.
Wow. Now, as far as the telecast itself, I was absolutely fine with no host.
Didn't miss the host.
No.
At all.
I thought it was great. And I thought, Olivia Colman was a highlight last night, certainly. I thought, obviously, the duet with Gaga and Bradley Cooper, I thought the sparks were going to fly right out of the TV and into my living room.
Yeah, no, that was very intense. I will say, I'm a little confused at the choice of at Bradley Cooper's choice to do the duet as Bradley Cooper and not as Jackson Maine. Mm. Like that seemed a little weird, but again, like it was by far the musical highlight of the evening. Like I love Bette Midler, but like that was that whole Mary Poppins thing was weird. I don't know why you don't bring if you're gonna have a performance of When a Cowboy Trades His Spurs for Wings. Bring Tim Blake Nelson out to do
yes,
it. Like
yeah.
He was so great in the movie. Mm-hmm. So and he did his own singing, so just have him sing it.
Right.
I don't know. It's the whole and the less that's said about what Jennifer Hudson did, the better. Like it's just the musical performances just weren't it makes you think, okay, maybe the Academy was right to just want to do like a medley and just have it one and done and get it through.
And then they left a bunch of people out of the In Memoriam segment.
It always happens. You know, I feel like there were a couple of pretty egregious omissions. The one that leapt out at me, Carol Channing, was tough.
Sandra Locke.
Yep, Sandra Locke was another big one. The gentleman, the Singing in the Rain director who...
Stanley Donen.
Right, but he had passed away like 2 or 3 days before. Right. So I get it. Like, I could see how something like that.
Sure.
But yeah, like it's... it's always a crapshoot as far as the in memoriam goes. And I'm kind of shocked they didn't end with Burt Reynolds, honestly.
Yeah, me too.
But what are you going to do?
Well, when you talked about the awards the other day, you said in your predictions, every generation needs its crash. And it sounds like we got that with Green Book. There were audible gasps in the audience. Very few people clapped. Wow.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's such a sort of reactionary pick in so many ways. I think there's a significant block of Academy voters, overwhelmingly white, overwhelmingly above the age of, say, 60, that sat there and listened to all this stuff and were like, you know what? You're not going to tell me who I can vote for. There's a certain kind of personality that really loves this kind of movie, this sort of oversimplification of racial issues, you know, crossing that divide, et cetera, et cetera. I think the best line of the night was came from Spike Lee backstage. He was like, every time I get here, like, I lose to somebody driving somebody else around. And it's true. Like, and it's just, and, you know, the comparisons to Driving Miss Daisy are, you know, very obvious and apt. But it's like I said.
And yet, as we were saying earlier, two stellar performances from the leads in this.
Yeah, no, you can't fault either Mahershala Ali, who absolutely deserved his win in this Best Supporting Actor category, or Viggo Mortensen, who deserved his nomination as leading actor. But you can have very strong performances in a film of questionable quality, as we learned not just from those films, but from Rami Malek taking home the statue for Bohemian Rhapsody, which, again, like, Christian Bale would have gotten my vote, but it's one of those things where it's like, it would have been, Rami Malek would have been the sort of memorable, like, you know, we got it wrong pick 5 years from now. But you know, Green Book took care of that. Like, nobody's going to remember that we had any doubts about Rami Malek, because everyone's going to be like, man, remember 6 years ago when Green Book won Best Picture? Man, what was that about?
Well, so let me ask you this. Down the road, 10 years, 20 years, you're a film historian. What are the movies, whether from those that were nominated or those that didn't get nominated, what are the movies that will stand the test of time from this year?
I think the ones that people are going to genuinely remember are movies like, I think Black Panther's got to be on that list. I think something like, one that I was kind of surprised at how little attention it got come award season. I think something like Sorry to Bother You is going to have a lot of staying power. I haven't seen it yet, but the resonance that the impression of resonance I've gotten from people who have experienced Bo Burnham's Eighth Grade.
Oh, I watched that Saturday night. Oh my gosh!
You know what I mean?
Wow!
Like, it seems like that's one of those movies. Like, because when you're able to capture a sort of moment in time with a coming of age film, like, those movies stick around. Mm. Like, those are the movies that stay in the cultural consciousness. So I think that probably has a really good shot at staying around.
Roma, certainly.
Yeah, you know, it's I would argue that Roma's one of those movies that's going to be around, not just for the quality of the film itself, but for the conversation that it started with regards to the transition from a cinema based movie business to one that allows room for the streaming contenders to have a place at the table. So,
and Black Panther, which changed the game in so many ways.
Well, it's just the idea that you have a Marvel movie, and, you know, the movie won 3 Oscars.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like, the fact that we're getting to the point where a movie like that can be treated with a degree of seriousness. And again, like, look, it's a comic book movie. We get it. But, you know, just because you can't continue to allow films to be completely defined and sort of hamstrung by the source material, by the intellectual property that inspired them. I mean, they're always going to be big, goofy, spandex, shoot 'em up superhero movies. That's okay. But you know what? Westerns used to be B-movie fare, yeah. You know, horror movies.
Well, like, I'm not a big comic book guy, but I'm excited to see Brie Larson as a superhero.
She's going
to
be great.
Yeah.
We've got a lot. There's a lot of potential going forward. And, like, one of the things that I think will make Black Panther so memorable from this year is that someone like Ryan Coogler was able to just demonstrate that, yes, you can make one of these and still put your own stamp on it, and you could still create like genuine art out of this sort of artifice. And sometime in the next decade we're gonna get our first legit superhero best picture contender. I think it's gonna happen.
I think so too. Absolutely. Alan Adams from The Main Edge with us. You saw some new movies this weekend?
I did.
Nice.
I did.
Nice.
I got to see a couple. I saw the wrestling biopic, Fighting With My Family. And I saw the third installment in the How to Train Your Dragon franchise.
Oh, well, where do you want to begin?
Oh, I could do either one. Whatever works best for you, sir.
Well, let's go dragons.
Sure. So How to Train Your Dragon, this is the third film in the series. It's, the subtitle is The Hidden World. It's a DreamWorks joint, it's the thing I love about it is it manages to capture the imagination in a way that the sort of franchise intended animated fare doesn't always. Like I love the idea of being able to maintain a series, but the thing about this one that is so great is it actually allows for a degree of character development and like narrative advancement. Whereas, you know, like a lot of the other ones, it's basically you just hit the reset button every time and it's essentially the same thing over and over again. Whereas in this franchise, you know, characters grow a little bit and learn a little bit. And again, it's still a cartoon movie for kids about, you know, Vikings riding dragons. Like we can't step away from that, nor should we, because Vikings riding dragons is awesome.
Yeah.
In this third installment, our lead character Hiccup, which will always be an awesome, awesome Viking name, voiced by Jay Baruchel. He's the chief of Berk, and he's trying really hard to maintain the sort of symbiotic relationship between man and dragon, and everything seems to be going well. But a sinister dragon hunter has been enlisted by some of the area warlords to take out, you know, Hiccup and all the dragons, and, you know, so they can take over. It's this dragon hunter named Grimmel, voiced by F. Murray Abraham, who's here.
Hello.
Which is great. So the basic story is him trying to, with his girlfriend, Astrid, voiced by America Ferrera, and his dragon Toothless, is going to try to save his friends, both human and dragon alike. And it turns out that maybe to do that, he's going to have to track down the perhaps legendary hidden world, which is a land of beyond the edge of the world where dragons live. And complicating matters is a light fury. See, Toothless is a night fury. A light fury turns up. And now Toothless has a lady friend on the mind. And so that also complicates things in ways that are both sweet and hilarious. What's fun about this movie, and I hadn't thought about it until I was looking at the cast list. When you cast an animated movie with the knowledge that it will be continuing onward as a series, you make the choices you make 10 years ago impact what you have
sure.
Then. And I don't think I've seen anything that was quite so like an encapsulation of the era in which it was first made than this movie, because it's like you've got Jay Baruchel and you've got America Ferrera, but you've also got like Jonah Hill, Kristen Wiig, Christopher Mintz-Plasse. Like it's like this weird snapshot of like the hipster Hollywood zeitgeist of like 2009. The now departed due to certain personal issues, T.J. Miller was part of the original cast, but he's no longer with us, shockingly. And then, Cate Blanchett's here too, because, you know, she's got to make movies for her kids as well. it's super fun. Like, they brought this sort of trilogy to a close. I don't know that they're necessarily going to commit to leaving this world entirely, because, again, they did almost $60 million of box office this weekend, so it's kind of hard to walk away from that.
Yeah.
But this particular story, I think, has come to a close. They brought it together very nicely, very tidily. It might have gotten a little dusty in the theater a couple of times. I'm not going to lie to you.
All right. How about the wrestling film?
I was not expecting this movie to be as good as it was.
Oh, good. I like that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't realize, because I had seen a glimpse of him in one of the trailers. This movie is written and directed by Stephen Merchant.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I was not anticipating that at all. It's based on a documentary from 2012 called The Wrestlers, Fighting With My Family, that aired on British television. It's the story of this family of professional wrestlers. Like, there's the mom and dad and the two children, the brother and sister, and they all sort of work together in this sort of fringy professional wrestling promotion in Norwich, England. They're the Knight family, and it's a great cast. Like, the dad is played by Nick Frost the mom is played by Lena Headey of Game of Thrones fame.
Yeah.
You've got this this young lady. Her name is Ciara. She's played by Florence Pugh, she's a teenager. She grows up as a wrestler alongside her brother, who wrestles under the name Zach Zodiac. And they basically spend all their time, like, working at their parents' wrestling school, and doing these sort of, like, the same sort of indie matches that, for instance, like a friend of the program, Ryan Waning, promotes. You know, it's that sort of, set up a couple hundred chairs in a gymnasium or a bar or whatever. You just have these people doing it, you know, because of their passion for it. But Ciara and her brother both have real talent, and so they submit tapes to the WWE in an effort to get a tryout, on and on. And finally, they get the opportunity to try out under the auspices of a sort of trainer known as Hutch, played by Vince Vaughn, because Vince Vaughn is here. They try out. They both perform very well, but Ciara is the only one who gets picked, and so she gets taken, invited to Orlando, Florida, to join the NXT training program for WWE. They make her change her name, so she takes the name Paige, after her favorite character on the TV show Charmed, which is a fantastic origin story for a wrestling name. And we just get to watch her as she, struggles to assimilate and, learns that there's a whole lot more to being in the WWE than just knowing how to wrestle. You know, she learns, she struggles with fitness and, cutting promos and all of this stuff. And it's this wonderful journey. And you watch her as she, deals with the doubts and all of those things. Again, it's one of those movies where we kind of already know the ending, because, if it didn't end a certain way, then they wouldn't be making the movie in the first place. But sometimes that's okay. I kind of dug the sort of symmetry of it, because, it's about the journey rather than the destination.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing with professional wrestling. The outcome is predetermined, but that doesn't mean you can't enjoy how you get there, which I thought was interesting. Yeah, the performances are good. The wrestling action is nice. It's competently executed. Stephen Merchant is not only writing and directing, but he's in the movie for a couple of scenes. It's funny. It's one of those things where he's maybe the last person, maybe not the dead last, but certainly I would go through a lot of names before I got to Stephen Merchant about doing a movie like this. But there's that sort of quirky wit to it, which really enhances the proceedings. It could have very easily been one of those sort of WWE projects that's just all about brand exploitation and expansion and all that. And there's plenty of that. Don't get me wrong. But at the same time, it's also a very weirdly funny and surprisingly heartwarming story as well. Obviously, there are some wrestlers in it. They work really hard to make you think The Rock is in this movie a lot more than he actually is, as far as the trailers are concerned. He's playing himself. I mean, it's like he's all over the trailer, but I mean, he's in a couple. It's basically an extended cameo.
Sure.
But, I mean, it's like if you're going to make that movie, like you got to have him in it. And there's some cameos from some other wrestlers, and they use some archival footage. And yeah, it's just, it was so much more fun than I thought. And I don't really know a lot about this sort of generation of professional wrestling, which I think, you know, you would think would maybe be a hindrance, but I don't think it was in this case, because I was hearing this story for the first time. And so it really proved to be a compelling one. Performances are good. It's well made. Yeah, fighting with my family. It's a lot better than I thought it was going
to
be.
There you go. Now, hey, Graham's all fired up to see Wonder Park. That must come out pretty soon. I'm looking at the cast. My word. Jennifer Garner, Mila Kunis, Matthew Broderick, John Oliver.
Oh, yeah. It's, I want to say, like 2 weeks.
Cool.
Like two weeks from Friday. I want to say it's like the fifth, like March 15th, I think.
He's seen the trailer about 500 times and can't wait for that.
Yeah. Well, it's, and I'm always down for seeing sort of an animated movie that's kind of original, like an original idea, like, you know, as opposed to an extension of another one. So, yeah. No, I think, I have a hunch that that young Graham's going to enjoy himself greatly.
Very good. Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.
We'll see you Wednesday.
Yeah, you will.
Alan Adams, Main Edge, with us on Downtown.